Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
We want to give a huge shout out to today's sponsor, the Blue Manatee Literacy Project, which is a nonprofit that operates an independent bookstore in Cincinnati, Ohio, but more on them later. I wish people could see this setup because it's like the least sexy. If anybody has any concept of what it might be like to record a podcast, it's not sexy.
No. I mean, I'm living in the middle of a 3-floor renovation project, mm-hmm. and I'm huddled in an empty room with like a sound screen surrounding my face.
I'm in what is supposed to be our guest room, but it's very clearly, if you could see any more of it, it's just a junk room right now, balancing my microphone, my iPad, and my computer on an old vinyl record player holder that we don't use anymore.
Nice.
Yeah, just literally grabbed anything I could to make this work. But hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you?
Last night we had pasta for dinner and...
Are you pasta pregnant?
I'm pasta pregnant. And I, instead of putting the leftovers away, just left it on the stove. And today, quote, for lunch, I just took a big spoon and spooned in... pasta into my mouth. So that's about as good as I'm doing. How are you? Nice.
Yeah, about the same. Yeah. I actually think that's a great metaphor for life in a pandemic. I was having a conversation on Twitter with some people I know. I actually know them in real life. But we were talking about parenting during the last 8 months we've been through. And I posted this GIF of somebody like trying to walk through a hurricane and they're just screaming, it's only a little bit of rain.
So we're basically in the same place.
Yeah.
But hey, like, I'm really excited. This is our first episode of season 2. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to Book It. Or if this is your first time, welcome to Book It. We need some like fanfare music here, producer.
I'm excited for season 2. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. And like, for those of you who are returning, you have sort of an idea of how we do this, but things are going to be a little bit different this season. We're going to be bringing you all the same, hopefully really interesting conversations and author interviews. We're really excited to get to highlight different indie bookstores across the country throughout the season. And we have our own bookshop that you can buy any of the books that we talk about on this episode in season 1 and season 2 and beyond. But yeah, it's a new year, new president, new hopefully turning a new leaf on COVID. But yeah, so like, I don't know, if you're new here, I thought we could do something to introduce ourselves. Jill, if you're game.
I'm ready.
I thought you could do your best to describe me as a reader, and I would do my best to describe you as a reader.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you look at me, you know me, we're pals, we've been reading together for a couple of years. How would you describe me as a reader? And maybe, like, my personality as a reader.
I'm cracking up because I misread the instructions and I thought I was describing you as a book and I was so ready.
That's a great idea. Do that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm ready for that question. So as a book, you are long. You are a giant book. And there's like 450 pages, but it takes place over like only 6 months. And nothing in particular happens.
Perfect.
But there's so much feeling. It's written in verse.
Okay. Just news to both of us, but I vibe with that.
Yeah, no, it is. It's written in verse. It's like there's lots of white space on every page. You crafted a font explicitly for this book. And it's all about like feelings and friendship and love. Yeah, that's what I've got. That's you as a book.
Wow. So some of that I totally agree with.
Yeah.
The font thing, no.
Here's why I feel like you have your own font. I want to remind you, because it's been a while since we've had to go to work in person, but like you walk in every day and I have to like take in your whole outfit, even your shoes. Like, I want to see all your shoes someday.
Sure, sure, sure.
Because I feel like every time I see you, like your whole outfit is very thoughtfully put together. And so in my mind, people who look thoughtfully put together have their own font.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Not because you're a fussy person or like particular, just because like you always seem to just be thoughtful about it.
Okay.
So your font is in you as a book, your font is thoughtfully chosen.
I really, really appreciate that. Man, this, I should have gone first because I cannot do this. You were really ready.
I was. Whatever question you originally asked me, I was unprepared. But the question you didn't ask, I'm there for it.
Well, okay. Okay, let me try and answer the question that you asked.
Okay.
Jill, as a book. So Jill, you said I am super long, but I only span about 6 months. I think that is equal parts shade and very true. Let's see. Jill as a book is, I think like around 300 pages, like a doable amount. Mm-hmm. But the opposite is it spans like birth to death.
Yeah.
Lots of time, lots of people come and go, very dialogue driven, and is about, I think it's like we're similar readers, in terms of what we're looking for emotionally, just the way it's done is maybe a little bit different. So I think yours is also very emotional, very much about relationships and female driven, which I think is true for me too.
Yeah.
And, oh God. I mean, I think that's like the gist of it, and that it's like very hometown vibes. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, like either whether or not that's like someone stays in their hometown or they're having hometown feelings, like escaping the way that they were brought up, that sort of thing. That is you as a book, and you as a reader is very similar.
Yes.
I'd say that like the books that you gravitate towards are multi-generational, multi-perspective, almost nostalgic feeling, and roughly 300 pages.
I love that, and I totally agree. Absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That's us as readers.
Absolutely. Definitely me as a book has like 8 billion characters. There has to be a chart in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wait, who is that? And you have to go back and reference.
I do love... It was like a real fad for a while, I would say, like not even that long ago, multi-perspective books, mm-hmm. where like every chapter was like a new character up to like 5 or 6 characters. And got to the point where I was like so overwhelmed with that. Like every book was that way. And I feel like it's petered out a little bit. There's not as much of that.
Yeah.
Which has made the ones that are really good again. Like... I would say one of our favorite books of 2020 was Connie Schultz's The Daughters of Erietown.
Yeah.
It's everything we're talking about right now. It's multi-generational. It's multi-perspective. But it feels like it. I don't know if it could have been told any other way.
By the way, Connie mentioned on Twitter yesterday, today, that Daughters of Erietown is in its 5th printing.
What?
Yes.
We're recording this at the end of 2020. So maybe it'll be more by the time...
I'm so excited. That book is so good.
Yeah. And you know what? You're welcome. We are responsible for 2 copies. Yours and mine.
Exactly.
But since we're talking about books we've read and books we're looking forward to, Jill, I was just curious. We're in a new year, like I said. What kind of books are you hoping to read in 2021? What kind of stories are you hoping to dive into?
I was nervous when we decided like on this topic. I was like, oh gosh, are there specific books I'm looking forward to reading?
Right.
Because before the election, I was just in this real funk. I was only reading basically what I had to read either for work or for the podcast. Right. And I was not really looking forward to like new reading.
Me neither. It was taking me months to read a book.
Yes. And then I started doing the prep for this episode last week. And I was reading about like upcoming titles. I was going through my email and seeing what the publishers had sent. And then I found the three books I'm going to talk about today. And I just got reinvigorated. Like I was so excited again about reading, and now we're on the other side of the election, and like I don't know, I just felt like this switch for me, and it was like all of a sudden I was ready to read again and be excited and read for fun. So I don't know, and I was surprised. It was very hard for me to just narrow down my choices for today because I don't know whether it's just because it had been a while or what. Like, everything sounded good. I almost downloaded a thriller. I don't read thrillers. Why would I do that? But
this
I was like,
brand new information.
No, I read the description. I was like, oh, that sounds intriguing. And then I was like, Jill, you don't like reading about violence. No. You're not gonna like that. But I don't know. Something has just clicked for me. I'm like ready. It's New Year's Day for me for reading.
Amen.
I'm here for it and I'm ready. How about you?
Well, but that begs – well, I'm curious though before I answer. Like that begs the question, your reading habits of 2020, is that reflected in all in what you're excited about in 2021? Or we talked a little bit at the end of season one about like – what surprised us as readers in 2020? And are any of the surprises carrying you through to the books you're looking forward to in 2021?
I don't know. I normally look first at kids' stuff. And so I will say that the impact the podcast has had on me is I focused primarily on grown-up stuff, which was different. But no, I would say in the end, what I narrowed down on is really on brand for my reading.
Sure.
After I just went crazy and
yes,
I have my to be read pile though is probably, I would say it's a little bit more diverse in topic than what I normally pick, but ultimately when I narrow down on like, what are the three things I'm most excited about? They're very on brand for me.
Same. And when I share them with you, like, it's just going to be endless and not surprised coming from you, I think, for me.
Yeah.
In the same way that I think that, like, my reading habits are very, like, I try not to read particularly habitually. I want to be reading tons of different kinds of stuff all of the time. I find myself gravitating, I think like anybody does, to the things that just speak to me on an emotional level. And I had the same experience as you did as a reader in the midst of the election season. I got to a point where I was just like, I can't do this. Like, no. I cannot read. I had such a foggy brain. I couldn't focus on anything for any amount of time. And I have so many different opportunities to read. Like, I am in a book club. We have this podcast. Was doing it for work. And then once the election was happening like full force, it was like around Halloween, I was like, forget it. I can't do this. I cannot read. So it was really just like Schitt's Creek after Schitt's Creek after Schitt's Creek.
Yeah. I did not read from at all, which is very unusual. I read no books the last week of October through past the election, past that next however many days it took us to get like enough electoral votes that it was Joe Biden. And a couple of days after that, it was I'm going to say it was close to 3 weeks that I did not read at all. Right. And I can't remember another time that has ever happened.
And you know what? I'm going to blame it on Midnight Sun. The minute I tried to crack open Midnight Sun, I got 10 pages in and I was like, fuck this. And then I couldn't read anything.
That is, oh my gosh, now that you've said it.
Yes.
So I jumped the gun. We were supposed to talk about our most anticipated reads for 2021. I jumped the gun and got so excited about one of them that I downloaded.
Fully read it.
I downloaded The Galley and read it. Prior to that, the last book I had read was the 150 or so pages of Midnight
Sun. You got kind of far into it.
I was making best effort for you and for the podcast.
What's funny is that, like, that was 100% supposed to be for me, and you read more of it than I did.
That's hilarious.
I just couldn't do it. I mean, it was actually painful. And I am not, I do not subscribe to the idea that you can only love reading when you love the book. Mm-mm. You can love reading and not have liked the book. But that was I hated reading this and I hated the book experience. Mm. And I think that was like a moment where I was like, wow, I really can't read right now. Like, this was allowed to be published.
I hope in 2021 that I feel more capable of reading books that challenge me.
Yeah.
Because I have gravitated towards lighter fare, which is sure. Fine. You need some of that. But I would like to dial it back some.
I think our reading habits emotionally are in contrast to what's happening around us. So, like, it's been a tough year. 2020 was a tough year. So, yeah, we're going to be reading possibly lighter stuff in contrast to, like, how horrible it is to wake up every morning. Hopefully. 2021 brings us some positive change and we can dive into more challenging work again. Because I agree. I like reading stuff that challenges me in good ways.
I totally agree. I'm excited. Hit me with your first most anticipated title. Not that it's your...
Okay.
Not that it's...
No, I hear you.
Yeah, you
this
know
is,
what I mean.
This is in no particular order.
Yes.
And when I read you the synopsis of this, you are going to just not be surprised.
Okay.
So this book comes out in April, so pretty soon, and it's called Call Baby. And I'm just going to read you the synopsis really quickly. Mm-hmm. I apologize if I'm saying any of the names wrong. I'm just going off of, like, the synopsis. So please, listener, if I'm saying anything wrong, please correct me. Layla desperately wants to become a mother, but each of her previous pregnancies has ended in heartbreak. This time has to be different, so she turns to the Milankins, an old and powerful Harlem family known for their call, a precious layer of skin that is the secret source of their healing power. When a deal for Layla to acquire a piece of call falls through, she is heartbroken. But when the child is stillborn, she is overcome with grief and rage. What she doesn't know is that a baby will soon be delivered in her family by her niece, Amara, an ambitious college student, and delivered to the Milankins to raise as one of their own. Halo is special. She's born with a call, and their matriarch, Maman, predicts the girl will restore the family's prosperity. Growing up, Halo feels that something in her life is not right. Did Josephine, the woman she calls mother, really bring her into the world? Why does her cousin Helena get to go to school and roam the streets of New York freely while she's confined to the family's decrepit brownstone? As the Milankins' thirst to maintain their status grows, Amara, now a successful lawyer running for district attorney, looks for a way to avenge her longstanding grudge against the family. When mother and daughter cross paths, Hala will be forced to decide where she truly belongs.
Ooh.
And it says it's perfect for fans of Ta-Nehisi Coates and Jacqueline Woodson.
Oh,
and
those two people.
And that is me. It's just a picture love those of you. I was saving that for last.
That so speaking of books really that challenge good.
Us, I know it reminds me a little bit of it does remind me in description elements of The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah,
like not overtly fantasy or anything, but just has like little sprinkles of magical realism.
Yeah.
Conjure Women, which I talked about in season one of Book It, it just has those two elements, and those two are two of my favorite books of the last couple of years, and I just cannot wait.
Have you noticed, I don't know how to describe this, have you noticed, like, I see it in books and a little bit on TV now, like, I'm gonna call it low-level witchcraft. Like, okay. But it's not necessarily magical realism.
Right.
You're just seeing like more magical elements in standard or even literary fiction.
It's running rampant in literary fiction.
Yeah, it's like not it's not segregated off in the corner anymore.
Right. And it's so specific that it's hard to like pinpoint. And I never expect it. And then it's suddenly in all of the books that I'm reading. I'm reading a book called Transcendent Kingdom right now. And there's also some of that in Transcendent Kingdom. And I would not have necessarily expected that. But it's a unique trend that I don't know anybody expected to be a trend.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know if it's fair to call it a trend.
I don't either. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. But anyway, that's one of mine.
Thing I've noticed. Okay, so I just want to lead with the book that I, as soon as I was aware of it, I had to download and read.
Great.
Let's just start high. The book, it's Infinite Country by Patricia Engel. The cover is so captivating. So as soon as you see it, you'll want to pick it up.
And if you've listened to a book before, you know that we're garbage people and we judge books by their beautiful covers.
You know that's us.
Yeah.
So it opens with a young woman named Talia, and she's at a correctional facility for adolescent girls in the mountains, up in the mountains in Colombia. And all we know is that she's been arrested. She's been involved in some kind of act of violence. And we know from her that it like may or may not have been warranted. It's kind of a gray area, but we don't know what it is. And we know that she urgently needs to get out and get back to Bogota because her dad has sent her a plane ticket to the United States, and her family is waiting there for her, and it might be her only chance to be reunited with her family.
Mm.
So that's kind of like the first chapter. And then it goes back in time. You meet her parents and you get their backstory on how they met as teenagers in Bogota. And there's kind of the backdrop of the Civil War and all the violence. And they both work in like a market stall. And then they get married and they have their first child. And then they decide to flee Bogota and go to the United States. But to get to the United States, they have to come on a travel visa. So they're not coming as legal immigrants. They're just here on like a vacation visa. As you move through the narration, they have like two more children. And then they decide they want to stay in the U.S. They do not want to return to the violence and the unrest in Colombia. So they let their visas expire and they stay in the U.S. knowing what the risks are.
Wow.
Keeping in mind, they're here illegally. Two of their children who are minors are American citizens, and one of their children is also here illegally. Dad gets deported, and then the mother, Elena, has to decide, like, what are they going to do?
Right.
And as all of this is going on, you remember you're getting sprinkled in information from that very first chapter where you're like, how did one of the kids end up in jail in Colombia? and then it comes to the climax where a decision has to be made, and I can't tell you about what.
This is such a good book report.
Right? It's the decision will change everybody's life forever, depending on what way it goes and whether or not they will ever be reunited. It is so, so good. So the author, Patricia Engel, is a dual citizen and the daughter of Colombian immigrants. So it's an own voices book. She's written a bunch of other books, but this is the first one that I have read from her.
Yeah, I've never read anything by her.
She does a really good job because there's five characters. There's the mom, the dad, and the three kids. She does a really good job of giving voice to all the different people because all of them are sitting in a slightly different legal situation, as well as how old they are. Because, I mean, at the beginning of the book, two of the kids don't even exist. And it really does a good job of speaking to the emotion of it, of exploring the decisions and the choices that families like this face,
right,
with, you know, mixed citizenship situations. It's timely. It's touching. The writing is amazing. The descriptions of Bogota, like, you feel like you're there. I've never been there. You feel like you're there. I just think it's so timely and it's so well done. And my immediate first thought when I finished it was, you know, last winter, everybody wanted us to be excited about American Dirt. And what? we're going to read about immigrants and blah, blah, whatever. This is the book we deserved when we got American Dirt.
Yeah.
But this, it's already got a star review from Booklist. It comes out February 23rd.
Oh, really soon?
Yeah. I want this book. I want so much success for this book. It's so good.
I think you missed your calling in being a PR person for someone.
Something.
You sold the book so well to me.
Simon & Schuster is welcome to hire me.
And also, like, very on brand that you, like, couldn't wait to read it.
It is. And it's about, you know, and it's set in Colombia.
Right.
And there's a civil war. It has multiple generations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're having some kind of stress.
Checks out. Yeah. Yep. Check.
It's all
check.
The things.
Did you mention this? When does it take place? In the past, in the future? Or, I'm sorry, in the past, in the present?
Yes, past and the present. Okay. It's like you've got a dreamer, you've got parents who do not have legal status in the United States, you have minors with American citizenship. This is what's happening in America.
Exactly, that's why I bring it up.
And it's so well done. And it's one thing where you're like emotionally invested in the characters and the plot, right, and the setup, but she does such a good job in, because you know that this weird thing is happening in the beginning,
right,
and it keeps, the publisher described it as a kaleidoscope of narration, and every time you turn it slightly, you know, the image changes, and it's the perfect metaphor for it because you just keep getting,
wow,
more information, and then you're, right, like kind of thrown off and you have to readjust again.
Right.
But it's seamless and it reads. I mean, I read it in 3 days.
Did you really?
I did.
How long is it?
I read it on a tablet. I don't know.
Oh, gosh. That's fine.
Isn't that terrible? I have no idea. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I sprung that on you. Well, I'm definitely adding that to my list. I love that comparison to, like, I actually had completely forgotten about American Dirt in the sense, mm-hmm, in two ways. One, that, like, it has been a long year. I cannot believe that happened this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And how the quick demise of that book was unreal.
Yeah.
And you have a pretty unique perspective on it in that, didn't you see her at a...
I was at the American Booksellers Association conference right after kind of all of the additional information about the book and the criticism kind of hit its peak, was the week that Macmillan had her at the American Booksellers Association annual conference in Baltimore. And she gave, like, the panel in the big room that was, like, the main thing for that hour. And it was awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I wish we had been given a book like this one instead.
And now we have.
So yeah. if you were like, gosh, I wish I could read a story about this experience that was not American Dirt, it is Infinite Country by Patricia Engel, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. I can't wait to hear what other people think. Today's episode is all about the books we're looking forward to reading in 2021, but let's talk about where we want to buy all these great titles. The Blue Manatee Literacy Project is our featured indie bookstore for this episode.
Yeah, and BMLP is amazing. They're a nonprofit in Cincinnati, Ohio, and they operate on a buy one, give one model. So for every book purchased with BMLP, they are able to donate a book to a child in need in the Cincinnati area.
We are so obsessed. They've donated over 40,000 books.
Wow.
What we love about BMLP is that they are great people working for a great cause, celebrating books, and hoping to change the literacy landscape for years to come.
Yeah, you really should go check them out. They're on Instagram at Blue Manatee Books. And if you're interested in shopping with them or donating to their cause, visit them online at bluemanatee.org. Well, my next one, you might have this on your list. I wouldn't be surprised if you do, but it's Concrete Rose by Angie Thomas. It is, I think, it's a prequel to The Hate U Give, isn't it?
I think so.
And to be perfectly honest, if I see Angie Thomas is publishing something, I'm going to be excited to read it.
Yeah.
And she is, I have said this before and I'll say it again and I'll take it to my grave, that Angie Thomas is the best young adult writer working today. And I think that what she does really well, that I think a lot of YA has a hard time with, is making young people feel and sound like young people. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes in an effort to take them very seriously, because I think young people wish to be taken seriously, we give them like vocabularies that they just wouldn't have yet, and just feels a little bit unrealistic in that sense. And she totally has dialed in to young people in a way that like I haven't experienced in YA in a long time. And we have, I mean, talked endlessly about how much we love The Hate U Give on this podcast, in between us, indie bookstores everywhere. I love The Hate U Give. Yeah, and this one is a prequel to that book. Should I read the synopsis?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So Angie Thomas revisits Garden Heights 17 years before the events at The Hate U Give in this searing and poignant exploration of Black boyhood and manhood. Basically, it tells the prequel to Maverick Carter, who is 17 years old, and he's trying to protect his family. And I mean, that's all we know because it's not out yet, but it's hard because it's like I have pretty high expectations for it because she's just knocked two out of the park.
Yeah.
But I also have like a lot of faith in the fact that she can do it.
Absolutely. I did not put that on my list because I thought you might. Oh. And then I thought if neither of us did, we would just mention it.
Sure. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I first read The Hate U Give, I don't know now, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You read it like right when it came out.
I did. I liked it. I liked it when we first got it into the store.
Right.
This whole episode is going to apparently be about how I like the way books look.
That's all of our episodes.
The cover just drew me in. I was really intrigued by it.
Me too.
And I really, really enjoyed it. But like you, like it's like the other two books, I've really liked them. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah.
I saw the email header announcing the book and I didn't even read what was underneath. I was just like, yes, we need that.
Same. Isn't that awful? Shouldn't I be like trying harder? I don't know. I just feel like we talked about this in season one. Like there are some books that have publishers and bookstores put a lot of effort into marketing that when you read it, you have no idea why. Like, it didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
There are other books that totally deserve it. And Angie Thomas's books have proven that, like, yeah, bombard me with information about this book. I want a countdown for when it's coming out. She's earned that.
Absolutely.
Give me another one.
In keeping on my theme.
Okay.
I have this one downloaded, but I haven't read it yet. But what drew my attention was the cover.
Great.
Yeah, it's the theme for today. The good news is my third pick, the cover hasn't been revealed yet. So that's coming.
Okay, good.
Okay, so I was drawn into the cover. It's like a pool of water with a reflection. You can see like two girls and like the sky. And it's the prettiest like blue-green color. And I just love that, like, I don't know, the water reflecting things is always like, I don't know. It's always an image I'm drawn to. And I'm always like guessing so much about like what might be happening when I see that kind of imagery.
Yes.
And then I saw two of the blurbs. One
that's also a big one for you.
I know. One was from Jodi Picoult, who, you know, has like 1,012,000 bestsellers. But then the second one was Susan Wiggs, who wrote The Lost and Found Bookshop. Which I really liked.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, this is interesting. So I downloaded it. And then, I mean, I feel like I was practically sold, you know, before I had even read the premise. But so there's trying to decide how to describe this. Okay. So Caroline is one of the characters, and she's like that person on Instagram that seems to have like a perfect life, and you kind of low-key hate them while simultaneously wanting to be their best friend.
I really hate the world.
Right. So she's described as like having a thriving career and three feisty children and a great marriage and a close-knit extended family. And you're like, okay, so you got that. Then there's the other character. I'm going to guess it's Sela? S-E-L-A. What do you think, Sela?
This is so hard to do when like the books haven't come out yet. We're absolutely guessing.
I'm going to go with Sela. Sela is described as, quote, living a life in shades of gray. What does that mean? I don't know, but I'm intrigued. She suffers from an irreversible kidney failure. Her marriage has crumbled in the wake of her illness. Her mother, whom she was really close to, has just unexpectedly passed away. And she's really worried about what will happen to her 2-year-old if she like doesn't find a kidney donor match. Ugh. And thanks to one of those pesky at-home DNA kits, she's now aware that Caroline, the first girl, is her half-sister.
That is actually a fear of mine.
That's what yes, this is like my low-key, I can never do one of those DNA kits. Whatever secrets my WASPy family has under the rugs in the closet, I don't want to know.
Keep them there.
They can live there forever.
Yes. We've had too much trauma in our lives already.
The last line of the write-up from the publisher says, Sela's world isn't as clear-cut as it appears, and one misstep could destroy it all. So I don't know. But I want to read it mostly because I have this irrational fear of these DNA tests, and right. I need like a book to confirm that I should be worried about it. I am dying to know, like they're always like, oh, it's 17% this region and 12%. I'm always like, oh gosh, I would love to know that. That seems so interesting.
Right. Sure.
But I just feel like this whole possibility, like,
yes.
There's no way that you know about all the people who are related to you. Let's frame it that way. There's just no way.
Didn't Barack Obama find out he's like barely related to Dick Cheney? I doubt he wanted to know that.
No, I don't want to know. Yeah, I don't want to know anything like that.
I
am blissfully ignorant and happy about it. But I'm excited to read this book because it's just so... It's one of those things where I feel like society writ large is like, oh, these things are so fun and everyone's doing them. And I'm like, absolutely not, because I'm afraid this very thing would happen to me.
You feel validated.
So I'm excited to read this. And after I'd already decided to put this on the list, I Googled the author. Guess what?
What?
She's from Cincinnati.
Oh my God. No fucking way.
Yeah. It's A Million Reasons Why, and it's by Jessica Stosser, S-T-A-W-S-E-R. She has...
Wait, say her name again.
Jessica Stosser, S-T-A-W-S-E-R.
That actually might be my old colleague.
Really?
She has three other books?
She has three other books. You know this person?
Jessica Stosser, yeah. She and I talk all of the time.
I want a physical copy of this book. I've downloaded it. Don't make me read it on my iPad.
I am going to say this with some confidence. We're going to have her on the podcast.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, she is, I will say, she is an amazing person. I worked at FNW at the same time that she was the editor-in-chief of Writer's Digest. And while I was there, she left because her publishing career was taking off. And she was just about to publish her first book. She was working on her second and third. And so she was like, I want to dedicate my time to this. I'm going to do it. And this is her fourth book. And she knocks them out. I mean, she's so generous.
We did not talk about any of our picks in advance. I cannot believe you actually know this person.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to read this. We have to make it a thing. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. I'll reach out to her.
Okay, great. It looks so good.
I'm so glad. I actually can't wait to tell her that, like, this just happened organically.
That's crazy. What's your next pick?
Okay. Wow. This sounds so good. My next pick, if you're new to Book It, as we said, or if you've come from listening from season one, something that we're going to be doing, which we're really excited about, is a Book It book club. And this was one that I was hoping to do for our first one, but it just comes out too late in the year. So maybe we'll revisit it for a later book club pick. But it's called Revival Season by Monica West. It is a really intriguing cover. It looks, it's like, yeah, I'm showing Jill over FaceTime. It is clearly like a muggy summer evening. I believe this is a debut novel, but it's about this family where every summer they pack themselves into their minivan and travel across southern states for these big revival seasons that her father, who is a preacher, does for like big mass healing services. And this summer that this book revolves around, the revival season doesn't go as planned, and Miriam, the main character, witnesses like a shocking act of violence, which makes her question her belief in her father and in her faith. And when they return home, Miriam's confusion grows as she discovers she might have the power to heal, even though her father and the church have always said that that power does not belong to women. And she has to decide basically throughout all of this between her faith, her family, and this power that she has to save other people. And it's just like, it's being called like a real like narrative on feminism and on faith.
Yeah.
And, it just sounds so good. And Ann Patchett loved it. She calls it tender and wise. And we love Ann Patchett.
Yeah.
And I'm just really interested in it because that's something else that I think has become something of a trend is like faith, but not faith, like faith in literature, but not faith-based books.
Yes.
And I'm really, really, really interested in that. I mean, I am.
Me too. It's very interesting to me because I feel like we kind of get beat over the head with like faith-based books, and it pushes out, and it's sort of like reflective of our culture too. Like, you know, coming off the election, like all this talk about, you know, people who go to church that vote. And I'm like, I go to church, I vote. I think it's just really interesting to add more complexity to who that is and what that looks like.
Yeah. And like, from my perspective, like, I'm not really a person of faith, but I grew up Jewish and I was one of the only Jewish people in my town, or I guess I lived in a town. And to your point, so much of, if a book was like faith-based, it was like very, very Christian and had like a really obvious end game. And something that I'm liking about literary fiction right now that incorporates faith is that it's a lot of questioning of it and how people's faith changes throughout their lives. Because I think that's a totally natural thing that happens that like nobody explores. And so I'm really excited to read Revival Season. I also love debut books, and I'm pretty sure it's a debut book. If it isn't, sorry, Monica.
It sounds really interesting, and I love the idea of kind of exploring feminism and the role of women in religious life, because I feel like a lot of what we see right now is people like Jen Hatmaker or Glennon Doyle, who are amazing and powerful and inspirational women, but aren't necessarily viewed as preachers or like literal healers in the way it sounds like this character is. It's sort of just, and they strike me as people who speak to and for and on behalf of women, whereas sure. like a role that is more when you're the preacher, it's like you're for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've done a good job. I respect both Jen Hatmaker and Glennon Doyle sure. and yes. don't want to minimize their impacts. But I like the idea of exploring the feminism of that aspect of religious life.
100%. And like, yeah, and the concept of being a woman within this, because it's the idea that this character has always been told the sin that she knows she has mm-hmm. is not given to women. So of course she doesn't have it. I think it can be pretty powerful. And it reminds me of, I mean, it's not the same, but there's a book called The Power that came out a couple years ago. It's kind of like a modern day Handmaid's Tale, but like, it is one of the best books I've ever read, but it's also one of the most difficult books I've ever read emotionally.
Yeah.
And it reminds me a little bit of that in tone, but I could be wrong. It isn't out yet.
Yeah. I'm excited. The cover was gorgeous. It made me just feel like mosquitoes were biting me.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like, love to hate it.
I was there. My third one is The Personal Librarian by Marie Benedict. It's historical fiction, but it sounds like it's one of those like based on a true story.
You are really like expanding your horizons.
I know.
Historical fiction?
Well, wait till you hear what the plot is. Okay. I think you're giving me more credit than I deserve. Here's the publisher summary. The remarkable little-known story of Bella DaCosta Green, J.P. Morgan's personal librarian, who became one of the most powerful women in New York, despite the dangerous secrets she kept in order to make her dreams come true. So basically, it follows the story of she came to New York in her 20s to curate J.P. Morgan's personal library of manuscripts, books, and artwork. And she built a reputation for just curating this world-class collection. She is a real person. That aspect of it really did happen.
Yeah.
She has a secret, though. She is actually passing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Her father is a Black graduate of Harvard, and her mother is Portuguese, and she's passing. And so it says the personal librarian tells the story of an extraordinary woman famous for her intellect, style, and wit, and shares the lengths she must go to for the protection of her family and her legacy to preserve her carefully crafted white identity in the racist world in which she lives.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? I want this book. It doesn't come out until June 1st, and I want it right now.
That's my problem with the one I just read. It comes out like June something, and I'm just like, damn it.
Doesn't that sound good?
It's not at all the same, but there's a book called Boy Snow Bird by, I think it's Helen Oyeyemi. And I can't say without giving it away, but it's a modern, but in the sense of it takes place in like the 1950s, retelling of Snow White, very loosely based off of Snow White. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'll say. Listener, if you've heard it, you'll know why it reminds me of that. But Jill, I
need to get it.
You need to read it. I don't know if you'll like it.
Okay.
I didn't love it, but the concept I was really interested in.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
I know. And the cover's not out yet. I immediately was like, I got to find the cover. And I tried to be sleuthy and still couldn't find it.
Well, there you go. Okay. So we're not garbage people. That's a book sounds good without seeing the cover.
Exactly.
Well, this is one last one, but this is an exciting one for us because it's going to be our first Book It book club pick. And our hope is that you guys will listen, or I'm sorry, you guys will read along with us as we read it. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a conversation, just Jill and I, about this book, sort of in a book club style. And we're really excited. We're going to, we have the opportunity to interview the author as well. It's called The Kindest Lie by Nancy Johnson. It's also a beautiful cover.
It is.
And I cannot wait to talk to her because it is so oddly, it's a debut and it is so specifically timely.
Yes. Yes. Do you want to do the plot summary?
It says, a promise could betray you. It's 2008, and the rise of Barack Obama ushers in a new kind of hope. In Chicago, Ruth Tuttle, an Ivy League-educated Black engineer, is married to a kind and successful man. He's eager to start a family, but Ruth is uncertain. She has never gotten over the baby she gave birth to and abandoned when she was a teenager. She has promised her family she'd never look back, but Ruth knows that to move forward, she must make peace with the past. Returning home, Ruth discovers the Indiana factory town of her youth is plagued by unemployment, racism, and despair. While her family is happy to see her, they remind her of the painful sacrifices to give Ruth a shot of a better future, like the comfortable middle-class life she now enjoys. Determined, Ruth begins digging into the past. As she uncovers burning secrets her family desperately wants to hide, she unexpectedly befriends Midnight, a young white boy who is also adrift and looking for connection. When a traumatic incident strains the town's already searing racial tensions, Ruth and Midnight find themselves on a collision course that could upend both their lives. So, that sounds amazing.
I'm so excited, and I'm excited for everybody to read it with us.
Me too. It is going to be such a joy, and I'm so excited for Nancy, my pal Nancy, the author, and that sounds like such a ambitious debut.
Yes, it does. I'm so excited to dig in because I feel like it's the perfect book club selection.
Yes.
There's so many like great themes to dig into.
Right.
I'm excited to talk to her about everything.
Everything.
But I'm excited too for us to kind of read it as a podcast community.
Yeah. And like, yes, totally.
So we'll be talking about it a little bit, I think, like on social media and yes. Gathering questions if you guys have things that you want us to ask Nancy. And I'm just looking forward to reading it as a community.
Me too. And like to Jill's point, if you're following us on social media, we're recording this before it's happened, but we've likely been talking about it. Hopefully you've been following along. We know that it's going to be a tight turnaround. I think there's like 2 weeks between when the book is published and when we're going to be talking about it. In the future, we'll give you guys more time. We were just like, to be honest, way too excited about this one to wait.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I really can't wait for our listeners to read along with us.
It's going to be so fun.
So you can find it. A link will be provided in the details of this podcast episode, wherever you're listening to this podcast. We'll also have it on our website, bookitpod.com.
I have no idea.
It's new to us. I'm really, really excited.
So that is it for season 2, episode 1.
Wow.
Can't believe I just said that.
Do you know what? Okay. I am so proud of us.
Yeah.
We've done all of this in quarantine. I mean, like every single episode besides like 2 of season 1, we have done, unfortunately, staring at Jill through a screen. And vice versa, steering me through a screen. One day we will be in the same room again, hopefully soon. And we're just really, really excited that y'all are still sticking around with us.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited. Michael and I have had like 3 planning meetings, and I'm so excited for what's to come in season 2. We've got great interviews lined up, so many fun books picked out. I just think it's going to be a blast.
Same. And like, hopefully you'll hear about a ton of interesting and important indie bookstores across the country. And hopefully you'll hear Jill roasting me as much as she did in season 1. Very easy to do. Maybe I watch Sex and the City 2 and read Twilight on the daily.
I have something you can absolutely drag me for. Do you know what I have started rewatching?
Okay, wait. I actually want to try and guess. Is it reality or is it fiction?
I'm rewatching it. It's on Netflix. So I guess it's fiction. It's Netflix.
It's not reality television?
No.
Okay, I have no idea. What is it?
Dawson's Creek.
Okay, Jill, even your like roasting content is better than mine.
I'm telling you, I had rewatched all the way through original Gilmore Girls and Year in the Life. Sure. And I was like,
you did that too.
About to start it over. And Netflix sent me an email of like, saw you just finished Gilmore Girls. They didn't say, again, Jill, get a life. And it was like other things you might enjoy. And it was like Dawson's Creek. And I was like, Dawson's Creek? Yes, please.
They were right.
And I have just started rewatching it. And I don't think I watched the whole series the first time.
I've seen like maybe two episodes, actually, now that I say that.
I feel like I went to college and maybe finished college and it was still on.
Okay. I mean, that's like the OG. Like, that's like
So
the teen
stay
show.
Stay tuned. Still think I'm still not a Joey and Dawson. No, it's not doing it for me. Second time around, I still want Joey to be with Pacey. There you go.
Who are these people?
You have to watch it.
Isn't there like a gay character, like one of the first in primetime television?
Oh, I don't know.
That's all I give a shit about. If there's no gay people in it, it's not for me.
All right. We've gone wildly far afield. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye.
Toodles.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Rakesy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Honeysuckler.